Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Andrew Adair. I represent Curtis Dale. There is ample evidence in the record, Your Honors, to prove that the defendants knew that Curtis Dale faced a substantial risk of retaliation in the penitentiary at Terre Haute. I'd like to first direct Your Honors to the point about the email.
I didn't understand this, your argument about how if you ask for protective custody, you endanger yourself. I've never seen that before. What's the basis for that?
Well, I think, Your Honor, I think that the evidence supports the conclusion that Curtis Dale believed that going to the special housing unit.
It's an irrational belief. I don't see how that gets him a case. Is there some literature or cases or something which suggests that protective custody is illusory because if you ask for it, they do a big investigation, they tell everybody, and you're identified as an informer and you get beat up? Is that? I say I've never seen that. Maybe it's true.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the evidence supports that that was his belief. The record indicates
his belief was groundless. I don't see how that makes a case for him.
Well, you're correct. The record indicates that the special housing unit was, in fact, a safer place than general population. However, it explains why he was reluctant to request special housing.
But look, you can't. It's like saying he refuses protective custody because he doesn't like the color of the walls, right? That wouldn't get him a case.
I think what's important is that
you have an irrational fear of protective custody. How can the prison be criticized because?
Well, Your Honor, I think what's key is Pamela Poston's
knowledge. Your own remedy. You can't say, "Well, I'm very nervous, so I want to be transported to a prison in Alaska. That's the only place these people won't be able to reach me."
Your Honor, Pamela Poston knew more than that Curtis.
You couldn't do that, could he?
No, Your Honor.
So what's the difference?
Well, for starters, Pamela Poston knew, or there's ample evidence to prove that she knew that Curtis Dale faced the snitch risk, and that's because of the email coming from his prosecuting attorney.
Responsive to my question.
Could you please repeat the question?
Yeah, if someone insists the only way I can be protected is to be sent to Alaska, prison doesn't have to pay attention to it. And similarly, if he says, "Well, I'm not going to tell you anything because I don't think protective custody is safe. I think the only safe thing is to transfer me to another prison. And I don't see how a prisoner can impose conditions like that.
But I don't think his will is the issue. I think what's the issue is Pamela Poston's knowledge that he was at substantial risk.
Protective custody is ample protection, and all it requires is that he specify his concern to the intake official. Then the prison is acting perfectly reasonably, it seems to me.
But, Your Honor, he was already in the special housing unit, and the process pushed him back into general population.
Well, he could have asked for protective custody.
And Pamela Poston could have also issued a detention order to keep him in protective custody.
Is that correct? Can the prison place him in protective custody on their own without his permission?
Yes, Your Honor. The record indicates that. And Pamela Poston said in her declaration that if she had believed that Curtis Dale faced a tangible risk of harm, that she had the power to have a detention order issued to keep him in special housing. So the fact that he didn't request it, I mean, his state of mind and conduct are essentially tangential. It's Pamela Poston's state of mind and Pamela Poston's.
No, but they have procedures. They want specificity. They don't just casually put a person into protective custody who's opposed to it. Then he'll sue them on another ground. He'll say, "Yeah, you shouldn't have done that. Violated your regulations."
Well, Your Honor, Pamela Poston said in her declaration that she received an email from the prosecutor. The prosecutor said he believed that he faced this retaliation risk.
That's a different issue. Suppose someone says, "I don't want to be in protective custody, and I'm not going to give you the information that your regulations require and then she goes ahead and puts him in protective custody, then he'll sue. Say, you violated the regulations, you stuck me in this hole, I didn't want to be there. How does the prison protect itself against such a person?
I'm not sure if I know the exact answer to that, but, Your Honor, in Farmer v. Brennan, which is substantially similar to this case, the inmate was simply released into the general population, and the Supreme Court held that that was enough evidence to impose liability.
That's not responsive to my question at all. Not responsive at all.
Well, I'm not sure exactly how the prison is supposed to protect itself, but looking at the constitutional standard, it has to do, I mean, the Constitution defines duties on the United States and its officers. If an officer of the United States has knowledge of a substantial risk and fails to take reasonable steps to prevent that harm, then the Supreme Court has held that that is sufficient to impose Eighth Amendment liability. And so I'm not exactly sure how the prison is supposed to, you know, manage all of its affairs, but I do know that the Supreme Court has held that.
So that it puts people in an impossible position.
I'm sorry?
You don't want to interpret the Constitution so it puts people in an impossible position where they're sued whatever they do.
I agree with that, but I disagree that it's an impossible position. I think that
You're sued if you put the person into protective custody without his permission, and you're sued if you don't.
Well, I don't know that I guess it's speculative that he would have sued if he had been kept in special housing. I don't know that that's true. I mean, his liberty interest is obviously substantially curtailed.
To another prison.
I'm sorry?
He wants to go to another prison.
Right. That's what he wanted.
Right. And if he doesn't get it, he's going to sue.
I'm not sure that that's true. I mean, the reason he sued was because he got attacked, not because he wasn't transferred to another prison. His claim is based on his injuries.
No, it looks as if he preferred to take his risks in general prison population to be in protective custody.
Well, that's why I think it's important to realize that, I mean, that's where his belief about the circumstances comes into play, because he may have been suffering from a misapprehension that general population was safer than the special housing unit. But regardless, the focus should at all times be on Pamela Poston, who knew that he faces substantial snitch risk and failed to keep him in special housing. She could have issued an order to keep him in special housing, but instead he was allowed to be pushed through the process and go into general population. Despite his professions of fear, he said that he didn't want to be there.
All right, if she had ordered him into protective custody, would that satisfy her constitutional requirements?
I think so, Your Honor, because the record reflects that the special housing unit is the safest place in the prison.
Protective custody.
Well, protective custody is the special housing unit. Protective custody is a status.
But you keep talking about his fear of being identified as someone seeking protective custody.
Right. Well, I think that what's confusing is, on one hand, you have the reality, which is that protective custody is not necessarily harmful to him. But on the other hand, you have his belief that going into protective custody, which does trigger an investigation, will confirm him as a marked man. And it's not clear that he understands that he can stay in protective custody as long as he wants to. The facts say that he can stay there as long as he wants to. No one will force him into general population if he doesn't want to be there. But the record...
He has veto power?
Correct. That's correct.
That's what I was trying to get at before. He has a veto power as to whether he goes, if he has the status of being in protective custody, he has a veto power as to whether he goes in the general population.
The record indicates that no one is forced, or no one is placed in general population if they claim to have a fear and they don't want to be there. That's correct.
That's a regulation, BOP regulation or something?
I don't know. I'm taking that from the government statement of facts, not in dispute, and I believe they rely on the declaration of one of the prison officers. But the point, though, is that he may not have understood that the point is that the system put him back into general population, and there's no evidence to reflect. In fact, the evidence is contrary to the point. He seems not to have understood that he had that veto power. He said to his correctional counselor, if they put me in special housing, they'll know why I did it. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Adair. Ms. Woods?
May it please the Court, my name is Shalise Woods, and I represent the four individual defendants in this case.
Ms. Woods, maybe you could clarify this entire problem of what the difference between, if there is one, between protective custody, special housing unit, and this veto power that an inmate has as to where he goes and under what circumstances.
In the Terre Haute prison, being placed in protective custody means being placed in the special housing unit or the SHU. Mr. Adair was correct about that. But I would like to clarify a few other things about your questions. Under the BOP policies, there's a unit team comprised of the unit manager, the case manager, and the case counselor. They review circumstances and issues that are raised to them by a prisoner. They discuss among themselves where the prisoner should be placed, whether there should be a recommendation for transfer, things of that nature. Ultimately, the decision is made by the unit manager if the movement is within the facility, for example, from general population into the SHU. It's made by the warden or the regional office if we're talking about a transfer. They're two very different things. The unit manager is not a defendant in this case. The record is clear that he is the individual. His name is Sean Sykes, and I believe Mr. Dale's counsel concedes this in the briefing. He is the individual that ultimately made the decision that Mr. Dale could be released from the SHU into general population in August before the attack occurred. In response to your other questions, any time an inmate requests protective custody for any reason, he doesn't even have to give a reason. If he says, I want you to put me in the SHU, he goes in the SHU. He is constantly...
What are the conditions in the special housing unit? Is that like solitary?
It is either solitary or with one other inmate.
Okay, so isn't it possible that what Dale is after here is he doesn't want to be in SHU. He doesn't want to be there. That's not a nice way to live. He'd like to be in another prison where he could mingle with the general population without risk of...
Pekin, specifically.
Is that what he would want? Probably. Is that a problem? That's what prisoners want. They don't like protective custody, not because they're afraid of they'll be unsafe, but because it's very restricted. They don't have any social life.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. The whole BOP system is geared to having the prisoner in general population. They do better in general population for various reasons. It's true that there are restrictions in the SHU. The record is clear in this case that what Mr. Dale wanted was a transfer, and not to any facility, but to Pekin, because it's a lesser security facility.
Please continue your thought.
Oh, no, that's what he kept saying to Ms. Poston and Mr. White, Pekin.
Could the unit manager have placed him in the SHU without his acquiescence?
Yes. If a risk becomes known to the officials, first of all, he himself could have been a risk to the general population. That's one scenario. And he could say, you know, whatever he wants to say. But if the officials know he's a risk, then he should go in the SHU. There are other things that can be done, but they're not really relevant here. The flip of that is, and it is the Farmer case, if that individual is at risk in the general population, there's a verifiable risk for whatever reason, and the officials know this person is not going to do well in general population. No matter what that individual says, you know, go ahead and put me in, they can make the decision to say, no, we're going to place you in the SHU because we think your life is at risk. But in this case, Mr. Dale brought information to them when he checked into the prison in April.
What you said, which I didn't realize before. So actually, the special housing unit, it's for both the predators and the prey.
It may be, yes.
So you can see how someone would not want to go there.
It is, though, the safest place to be.
But if the alternative is to be another prison altogether, that would be much more desirable.
Yes. And prisoners frequently ask to be transferred, and they typically know where they want to go, and they request
Are they ever given that? Do they ever succeed in such requests?
An outright choice?
Yeah.
Well, if they can present information under your hypothetical about Alaska that truly that is the only place that they can be safe, then it would be accommodated eventually. But they would need to go into protective custody, an investigation would be done, and Mr. Dale declined to do any of those things in this case.
How strictly do the district courts here, this Indiana case, Judge Barker, knocking out this fellow's statement in opposition to the summary judgment motion? He had a 6-8 page thing he filed, and the court just said doesn't conform to the local rule 56, so I'm not going to consider any of that. So, doesn't that create any problems for you?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because she did discuss the Rule 56 requirements, and I believe on guidance from this court, our district courts have been routinely doing that in summary judgment cases where the plaintiffs, pro se or not, don't present admissible evidence. But then in the order she says, even had I considered his allegations, I would have come out this way. Keep in mind, what she relied on most of all was his own deposition testimony, which was very damaging to his case.
He had a lot of things he said about this King person, the conversations he had about his safety, and that those were not recorded, and so on. I just think it somewhat creates some problems when you have the district courts being so... maybe formalistic isn't the right word, but just being requiring such close adherence by a pro se litigant to the requirements of Rule 56 that we expect lawyers to do in summary judgment practice.
I think it could have created problems if he had disputed those material facts about what took place in the conversations with Eric White and Pam Poston. But in his deposition, when asked, is this what you said to them, he agreed with that. It's undisputed. And when asked, did you ever tell them X, Y, Z, he said, no, I never told them that. The record's clear that from the time he went into general population, and he was there over a month before the attack occurred, he saw Pam Poston and Eric White on virtually a daily basis. Their offices are right there. He walks past them. He went to them from time to time to ask for various forms. He wasn't aware that this particular inmate, Parrish Barnes, was a threat to him until...
That's the thing. It was never an identification of a particular person.
That's true.
He felt danger to, I believe.
Yes, and when he did begin to worry that Parrish Barnes had a problem with him, he decided to handle it himself. And even the day the attack occurred, he testified that he voluntarily went for a walk with Mr. Barnes because he wasn't afraid of him. He thought he had handled everything himself, and he didn't feel any risk of harm from Mr. Barnes at all up till when the attack happened.
Has he recovered from his wounds?
Yes, fortunately, they were, I believe, 7 stab wounds, but they were fortunately superficial, and he is fine now, yes.
I'm curious. It shows my ignorance about prisons, but when you said he would drop in on the offices, so the prisoners are more or less walking around at will and dropping in on...
Yes.
On offices of the correctional staff.
This is at Terre Haute?
Yes.
Don't you have all the inmates sentenced to death in federal prisons at Terre Haute?
Not all of them.
You do.
I'm sorry?
I think, all the male, then there's 48 of them or something, are housed.
Do we have all of it? All of them? Yes. I thought your question was, are they all sentenced to death? No.
No,
fortunately. No, Your Honor, in general population, and keep in mind, Eric White was
high security, though.
Yeah.
Isn't it a high security?
There are portions of it.
Oh, I see. So this is a lower portion where prisoners are not escorted as they go around.
Yes, yeah. This is the general population. His counselor, Eric White, and his case manager, Pam Poston, were deliberately placed among the general population because they are supposed to be accessible to the inmates. If inmates have problems, they're supposed to be right there to talk to them.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Thank
you very much, Ms. Woods. So, Mr. Adair, your time had expired, but you can have another minute.
I'd just like to make a couple of very short points. First of all, it's true that Terre Haute at the time was the only federal prison, maybe still is, with the death row. I think that emphasizes the nature of threats that someone like Curtis Dale, who is marked as a cooperator, face inside Terre Haute. The only other point I'd like to make in rebuttal is that the issue about whether he deserved or was entitled to a transfer is not at issue in this case. The issue is whether Pamela Poston ought to have detained him in the special housing unit to protect him. On page 26 of the separate appendix that I filed.
But against his will.
Against his will, perhaps. But again, my argument is that.
Why perhaps?
Let me retract that. My argument is that his will is not at issue in this case. His will is beside the point. Pamela Poston's knowledge and conduct are what is at issue in this case, and a jury could conclude that her knowledge of the risk that he faced plus her handling of the situation is consistent with a finding of deliberate indifference. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Adair, and you were appointed. We thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client.